Are you at a crossroads in life with unanswered questions? How does your past connect to your present life? October Hallam can help you discover how your past connects to your present and is shaping your future. October is an intuitive, healer, empath, and medium with over 20 years of experience helping people navigate through some of life's greatest challenges. A recent client from Egypt says, "October is pure magic. We keep coming back for more," and recommended her to our closest friends. If you would like to book a session with October, please contact her at theancientgift222@gmail.com. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Joshua Chairs. Before I bring him on, a couple of announcements. First, I want to thank all of you listening. You, the audience, are amazing. Thank you so much for supporting us and helping us out over the years. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for all of you. So thank you. Forbidden Knowledge News is always available on Rockfin, Minds, Odyssey, Rumble, and all podcast platforms. Rockfin is where you're going to get all our premium content. You also get all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin for only $10 a month. Just go to rockfin.com/FKNplus or click the link there to sign up. We have started production on the Forbidden documentary. It's going to be amazing, and we have epic plans for this. If you would like to help by leaving a donation, you can go to supportfkn.com or you can use the PayPal link in the description. If you do make a donation through supportfkn.com, you get tons of never-before bonus JFK files and information from Corey Hughes' upcoming book about the JFK assassination, A Warning from History. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news. It's also the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network, where you get amazing podcasts like Raised by Giants, The Ancient Gift, Inception, Understanding Propaganda, Quantum Guide Show, Day Zero, and many more. And finally, check out our friends at C60 Purple Power. C60 has been personally outstanding. It may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. It's helped me with energy, inflammation. I've lost tons of weight, and I feel amazing. Check them out for yourself. Just click the link in the description, and you can get 10% off your order plus free shipping. Today I want to welcome Joshua Chairs. He is a paranormal investigator, writer, researcher, musician, and publicist. In August of 2020, he founded Phantom Detectives, LLC, as a way to help people who are going through paranormal experiences. Using the Paranormal Research Society blueprint, he is hoping to build a team of renowned paranormal investigators and is dedicated to helping people that are going through these experiences. On May 2021, Chairs' company, Phantom Detectives, acquired the rights to Dark Matter News. Joshua, welcome. How you doing?
I'm very good. How are you today?
I'm great, man. Thank you so much for coming on. This is going to be great. Like I said in your intro, you're a paranormal investigator, among other things, and you founded Phantom Detectives, and you now have a team of investigators. You travel all over helping people with perceived paranormal phenomenon and other high strangeness. So I can't wait to get some of your insights into a collective of strange phenomenon that I want to talk about. But this is your first time on. Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to start investigating.
Well, it actually dates back to 1988. There was a place called the General Wayne Inn, a show called Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack that everyone watched when they were growing up, and it used to cover UFOs and ghosts a lot. And there was an episode in 1987, I remember as a three-year-old kid, called the General Wayne Inn. This is a old coaching inn. It dates back to 1705. That was also called the Wayside Inn before it was renamed the General Wayne, named after Revolutionary War hero, Major General Anthony Wayne. So after watching that episode, it was called The Inn of the 17 Ghosts, I had the opportunity to do my own investigation there with a parapsychologist who did a quantitative investigation of the inn in 2002. Her name was Michaeline Mayer. She has since passed away, but at the time, she actually had a local Philadelphia paranormal investigation team outside there. So I got the opportunity to go down to the wine cellar earlier, and in the wine cellar, basically, people reported seeing a Hessian soldier from the Civil War. So I grabbed my digital camera and just took three consecutive pictures. That's usually what you do to see if you might not pick something on the first photo or the second photo, but we might get something on the third photo. So after taking the third photo, I picked up some really weird green and yellow streaks of light that I have no reasonable explanation for why that had occurred. So overall, that really piqued my interest in the supernatural doing that investigation. And of course, over the next 12 years, I then of course got into watching Ghost Hunters when that came out in 04, and then Ghost Adventures when that premiered in 2008 with Zach Bagans, Aaron Goodwin, and basically Nick Groff. And then of course in 2014, I then basically decided, okay, well, I saw this episode called A Haunting of Summerwind. It was a episode based on this account of the Henshaw family who lived at Summerwind in 1969, 1970, and they had a lot of reported paranormal phenomena during this time period. And the Summerwind mansion actually was called West Bay Lake Fishing Lodge. You could actually eat there for $4.99 a month, and also like basically stay there for $4.99 a night. And so basically during this time, Robert Lamont had actually had a maid that told him that, hey, the house is haunted, and you don't need to stay there. So he basically, until he had himself, because I'll just grow up, there's no such thing as ghosts, until he had his own paranormal at basically there, because he fired two gunshots, thus missing the ghost and never returning to the mansion again. And then when he died in 1948, the mansion reverted to a lady named Lillian Kiefer. And then basically after that period, over the next 20 years, she had people that would have it and then basically give it back to her. So they couldn't afford to keep up on the upkeep until the Henshaw family moved in. And then I know the Henshaw family, because I bought the original blueprints to Summerwind from Ginger Henshaw's brother, Raymond von Bober Jr. And this is known as Wisconsin's most notorious haunted house. And basically there, the Henshaw family reports seeing flickering shadows, doors that would fly open on their own. They had the stepfather had the reported nailing the windows shut. There's also reports of a skeleton in a crawl space that the daughter April actually reported seeing in this crawl space. Father shined his flashlight into this crawl space, and they see the skeleton with black hair. But when they went to go and call the police to tell them about it, it had disappeared. And then basically, fortunately, Ginger's stepfather lost her mind and played the organ to all hours of the night. And basically, Ginger's husband then, the family had to stay in one room. And so Ginger left the mansion around 1971, 1972. And then her father, Raymond von Bober Sr., had bought the place. He was a popcorn vendor from Chicago. And during this time period, he had similar issues with the Henshaws tools disappearing, where they measured blueprints, the rooms were known to change shape when they used, tape measures. There was also reports of, stuff breaking down and then basically working the next day. And then basically Mr. Von Bober Jr., Ray Jr., who basically owned the blueprints, he was his father since passed, but he remembers being there as a 23-year-old kid, and he reported basically hearing gunshots down, like seeing visions of the gunshots that were there, you know, literally 30 years earlier when Mr. Lamont was there. So unfortunately, the house then went back to Lillian Kiefer in 1976, and then, of course, during that time period, she had it till her death in 1985. Then another people that are friends with current my friend Craig Nearing, who runs the Fox Valley Ghost Hunters up in Wisconsin. He actually runs his own team. He actually does campouts every year on the property. Mrs. Tracy, Mr. Tracy got it from Miss Tracy. They're a couple from La Crosse, Wisconsin. And basically when they reported going up to the, he bought this as a wedding anniversary present for his wife. And then when he bought it for a wedding anniversary present, basically they reported that the mansion was kind of inhaling, had taking a life of its own, walking up to it one night. And then unfortunately, 2 years later, it burnt down in 1988. All that remains today are the two tall chimneys, the foundation, and the steps. But so we circled to 2014 when I start getting more involved in research and the history. And then I watched the episode of A Haunting. And then I saw that the basically I went on the website, summerwindmansion.com, which was still working at that time. And so basically I bought the original blueprints to Summerwind. I emailed the seller and said, hey, do you want to move these, and if so, what's your asking price? So after I went and bought the blueprints to Summerwind, I reached out to Craig Nearing, who basically runs Fox Valley up there, and he actually does campouts every year on the property. He had the access to the property and I had access to the blueprints, so together we created the Summerwind Restoration Society as a way to rebuild, restore, and relaunch Summerwind as a haunted bed and breakfast. And the project is still currently, we're still trying to get funding to rebuild it. Craig, currently we're trying to find a production company to take on, to do a documentary on the rebuilding of Summerwind. And as soon as we can do that, we could probably start working on, you know, getting funding to rebuild it.
When was your first investigation, and tell us about some of the most profound investigations that you've had?
Sure. I was on after basically doing the Summerwind Restoration Society. I then also, of course, worked with a couple of Art Bell staff members in 2015, 2016. The funny thing is I called in one night and basically just started booking, you know, their guests and also helping with his final return, and Art had died in 2018. So some of our investigations, I've been to a lot of locations over the last 3 or 4 years. And so after basically leaving, doing a Summerwind Restoration Site, I took a break from that. And I filmed a previous team called Thin Line Paranormal with my former leader, Aubrey Baldwin. And there we investigated Penhurst, which is a really fascinating location because Penhurst is one of the most interesting locations in Pennsylvania. It was opened in 1907. It closed in 1987. The first buildings were the girls' dining room, the boys, the lower campus. And one day, Sasha and I were there, my former lead investigator, and we were in the basement area. And what was interesting was Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters was actually there that night. He was actually visiting some friends outside Philadelphia. So he actually showed us how to hold the SLS camera, how to, you know, do ghost box sweeps. And there we actually used a thermal camera at the bottom of the Philadelphia building. And we saw this, the thermal camera takes hot and cold signatures. You point and zap it. And what's interesting was on this rusted out iron door, we reported seeing like these really weird cold, hands, like literally handprints right on the actual door. But the funny thing is no one had been down that part of the the hall of the basement area. And so we're trying to figure out like, why is there, you know, this pair of like cold boots right on this door? So then that was really an interesting experience when we did Penhurst. And of course, we also I decided, hey, well, this society is not progressing the way that I thought it was doing. So I decided to start a new society. Because Sasha and I needed a new fresh start. So I created Phantom Detectives as a way to help people that are detecting the paranormal at haunted locations. And our first pre-investigation, we did a place called the Selma Mansion, which is with a guy named Brian J. Cano, who has a show called The Haunted Collector. And Brian actually has, of course, he was the tech manager on the show with John Zaffis, and he actually gave us a really quick rundown. And that night, we actually caught a lot of interesting things. That, of course, the REM pods were going off. The basically, of course, doors were flying open on their own. It was just a really terrifying experience that night that we were there. And this was before Phantom Detectives. And then, of course, our first official team investigation was on December 9th, 2021 at the Sanderson Museum with Sasha. Sasha and I had booked it out for the night. And what was interesting in this place is Christian Sanderson was a well-known violinist. He was a well-known poet. He was a radio show host. He actually also did a lot of plays and square dances in the Chads Ford area. So he was very well liked and well respected. And what was interesting was with this his mother Hannah had died there in 2000, sorry, in 1946. So basically there in the basement area in the violin room, which is the most active room, you can see some of Mr. Sanderson's violins still on display. They're put in glass cases. And the night that we were there, we actually set up a DVR camera, and which is picks up it's the standard security camera you have. And what's interesting was our EMF detectors were going off at the same time the security camera was going off. At the same time, we caught several orbs at the same time. We called an EVP. So in my opinion, when you can add layers upon layers with the equipment and also the cameras, you definitely got something intelligent and also something that wants to directly interact with you. And then, of course, when we did the Mill of Anselma, that was actually founded by Samuel Lightfoot in 1747. It's the oldest continuing operating mill in the entire United States. It's very old and historic, and it dates back to many, many years. It actually basically has what's interesting is a famous poet named Sarah Oberheiser lived there. And of course, and what was interesting the night that we were there, Sasha and I were doing that investigation at that time. And with the door of the we had the door of the mill was completely bolted shut. We're the only ones on the property, and the door just flew open by itself. And that's on our YouTube channel, Phantom Detectives LLC. You can actually see that door fly open by itself. And what was interesting about that night, not only did the door fly open by itself, but we also captured SLS camera, basically SLS camera, basically pictures, basically. And we also captured some actual interesting basically phenomena, basically. So during that night, we also got called an EVP on the third floor of the mill when I was sitting down by myself just asking questions, and the word go actually was on the camera. So that was really fascinating. And then basically on top of that, we also captured some thermal images. So that was a really amazing location. I mean, it's definitely one of the oldest continuing operating mills. It's like cornmeal and grain, stuff like that. So it's been around for 200 plus years.
Wow. Now, do you guys just pick your own locations to check out, or do you actually get calls from maybe families that are in distress, families looking to get rid of whatever they perceive is in their homes or spirits, or is it something that you choose to do?
Well, I think some of these locations that we go to, basically the last couple over the last 2 years, it's kind of been a combination of both. We get of course, our eighth investigation that we did was at our client Melissa. Melissa, of course, is not here presently, but she's a psychic medium on the team. She's a student of Cindy Kay's from the Holzer Files, and she's been studying a mediumship under her, and she also knows remote viewing, crystal healing, just fantastic. So we did a investigation with one of her clients, and then of course we had this other client in Philadelphia that was experiencing extraterrestrial, abduction, possibly had markings on his legs, and he reached out to us through our website. And then we also had, basically sometimes some of our own locations, like the Betsy Ross House that we've been to. We've also been to, Eastern State Penitentiary before. So a lot of these locations, sometimes it's a kind of a combination of both the client reaching out to us and also us just going out on our own, investigations, getting permission from the location managers to do the investigations.
Now, did you ever come across a case or a location that was maybe a little bit too much for your team, maybe a little above your pay grade, something that couldn't be taken care of by a traditional, you know, a paranormal investigative team? Maybe you had to call in some bigger guns?
Well, we haven't had any cases like that deal of like with inhuman or demonic hauntings yet. But I will say there was a case that we did. I just kind of elaborate a little bit on a guy named John. We basically named him John. He lives in Philadelphia. And during this investigation, he had all kinds of his bed sheets were being pulled off by themselves. He also reported basically seeing these alien and extraterrestrial spirits. He just felt very uneasy in that apartment building. And in August of 2021, the team actually went there. Sasha, of course, was still there at that time. She was lead investigator. Rick came, Melissa, and myself. And this was recorded on Dark Hour Paranormal's YouTube channel. And there, we literally felt like the minute that we walked in that apartment, the energy was just completely sucked the life out of us. You could definitely feel that it was very heavy, felt very uneasy. And then Melissa, actually, when she was doing her readings, she was feeling the presence of an older woman and also the older woman and also her middle-aged daughter. And then there supposedly was a 19-year-old that we were picking up on via the ghost box. The ghost box scans AM and FM radio stations and also picks up different kinds of phenomena. We were using the Estes method. We tied up our lead investigator, Sasha, and we put a blindfold on her and we started scanning the ghost box and asking questions. And we were picking up on this 19-year-old that took his life and the two female spirits that were there. They're kind of the potty mouth spirits. It felt like we got hit in the gut. Like you got that feeling of just like literally just like being punched right in the stomach. And I was also there with them that night, you know, taking thermal pictures. And I swore I saw the TV like literally lift up by just a couple inches off the TV stand by itself. And that was just a completely, you know, fascinating investigation because I've never seen this client's, you know, house basically in this apartment basically in Philadelphia to have both UFO activity and ghosts kind of in one. And it was one of the most fascinating cases that we've ever had.
Right on. Now, to me, there are undeniable connections to extraterrestrials, to which what people consider spirit world, paranormal activity, even, you know, magical practices, PSI phenomenon. I believe that this is all connected to our consciousness in some way. And the more I look into these things, the stronger it's these perceived connections become. I'm wondering if you have come across the same thing, and does that kind of broaden the spectrum of how you handle some of these cases, keeping in mind that it could be a wide variety of phenomena and just not maybe just spirits or ghosts or one perceived thing?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, in March of 2021, before our Betsy Ross House investigation, I invited somebody that I thought would really help us, you know, kind of bring that bridge the gap of the UFO and the ghost hunting community. When I brought in a guy named Rick Warner, and Rick is actually the U.S. ambassador to the Italian UFO Federation, FUI, and actually also appeared on the documentary series Unstoppable and was a fully certified UFO investigator through MUFON. He was also, unfortunately, he was just not seeing how MUFON was liking to do things. So he decided to start his own organization called Extraterrestrial Research Center. His website is ERC2Explore.com. And he kind of was that bridge that we needed to be able to bridge the gap between the you know, extraterrestrial stuff. And he's also trained in field research and field manuals. So he kind of really helped us get to that point where we needed to be able to basically do the actual, like you bring in the actual elements between both the UFO and the ghost field. So he's kind of that, you know, he kind of does both. And he's just been a fantastic fit because he brings a quantitative analysis and also his skills at interviewing our clients before we do the investigations. He's very skilled at knowing how exactly what to ask and how to ask it. So basically, based on that interview, that audio recording that Rick does, then we can basically know whether or not this case is worth warranted taking on. So it's very important to have a good knowledge of both, you know, all disciplines of the paranormal in order to go into these locations and be prepared.
Now, many investigators, paranormal investigators that I've spoken with and had on the show before have talked about how not only them, but people on their team might have strange phenomena follow them home, maybe entity attachments, or just unusual occurrences that surround them after being in a certain location. Have you or your team ever experienced any of this?
Well, absolutely. In fact, I'm not going to say we've been followed home yet, but what was interesting was we returned to the Sanderson Museum for our sixth investigation last September. And actually, this was the first time Rick and Melissa actually were at the location. So they were there with Sasha that night. And so when we went there for National Ghost Hunting Day, this is an event that is streamed live, basically in like 200 plus teams from around the world investigate simultaneously at once. And what they do is they bridge the gap in para-unity. So basically the night that we were there, we actually we had the most weirdest kind of phenomena, because the night that we were doing the investigation after we had left the stream between 8 and 9, right after the stream, basically Rick and Melissa went to go downstairs on the other part of the house, and basically right inside the museum, they went down the other steps, and all the bags were piled up. All our equipment bags were piled up completely in front of the steps. And I have no rational explanation of how that happened, why it happened. And basically from that actual experience, then, Rick and Melissa came upstairs and asked Sasha, hey, did you guys go downstairs and like play a joke on us and put the bags in front of the doors or the actual, part of the steps? And no, we said, no, we were up here doing baseline readings with our EMF detectors. There's no way that we could have piled up them bags in front of the stairs. And basically then, of course, that the night went on, we basically asked, the spirits of the Sanderson Museum, did you guys try to block us from leaving? And we called an EVP that said, be afraid. So that to me, it seemed to be Hannah, Christian Sanderson's mother, trying to say, hey, I'm basically here and I am basically letting you know my presence and be scared of us. And we don't want you to leave this museum. And no one was there that night. And I don't know how someone could have came, because the doors were completely locked as well, latched shut. So for them bags just to pile up by themselves, unfortunately, we didn't have a camera, in that room to, be able to capture that. But still, that phenomena was, extremely strange for that to happen. And especially to two of our newest members that basically, never happened to any other team members. But after that investigation, we felt a huge weight was lifted upon us, that we were definitely feeling very uneasy, vomiting, throwing up, you could definitely see these locations, depending on the energy, the intelligent or the residual energy, they can suck the life out of you. And it took, we had to bless ourselves after the investigation by using sage.
Now, you just mentioned residual energy. I know that in the paranormal field, there's lots of different types of what's considered hauntings. You have your intelligent or residual. And I know it's being discovered that there's plenty of just high strange places that have some kind of energy field or maybe electromagnetic properties or something under their ground, maybe some type of rocks or mineral that's drawing this type of profound energy to these places. Do you take all that into account in your investigations as well?
Oh, absolutely. We need to be 100% prepared. For example, if you, depending on where you go to, if you go to a place that, for example, Gettysburg, just most like I was there last summer with Sasha. We were just doing an event with Dave Giuliano. It was a non-fan of detectives investigation. We were just there to support him. And also we were there just to do a tour of the Gettysburg battlefield. And there you can definitely feel it's a very kind of residual kind of place, because it's like a tape recorder and a past event that's playing itself over and over again. And the night that we were there, we're at the David Stewart farm. This was a farm right outside the battlefield, taking thermal pictures. And right where, literally right outside the barn on the property, there's this completely a cornfield. We point and zapped and we captured what appeared to be some silhouettes of some actual Civil War figures, basically with wearing hats basically on the thermal camera. I thought that was a really great capture because basically anytime you can, hit the thermal camera behind a solid wall, you're going, and just like you do the SLS camera, as long as the SLS camera doesn't point and map, a water bottle, for example, if you have a solid wall or a solid, like just nothing there, you most likely you're going to pick up some phenomena. So definitely, these locations, every location is different, some, spirits will pick and choose certain apparatuses while others basically other piece of equipment might not work at one place. And then all of a sudden you might go take that same piece of equipment to another place and it's going off like crazy. So it's just kind of really hit or miss. Like you just don't know what the spirits are going to do on investigation. They basically are, they don't do it. They don't act on command. They just do it whenever they want.
Right. Now, for me, I have a lot of friends and personal colleagues that are mediums and what's considered psychics. And I would believe that having a psychic or medium on your investigation team would put you at an advantage over investigation teams that maybe didn't and just went in, with their just equipment and whatever they're working with. But with a medium, I've seen it myself. They can tap into different energies in the house and, even possibly even past events and specific people. Now, how do you think that it gives you a little bit more an advantage of an investigation with a psychic?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we have two mediums on our team. We actually have the first one, of course, besides Melissa, we also have Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer. He's the author of three books. He's a fourth generation Oxford educated lawyer. He's a world renowned medium, and he's also studied Arthur Findlay College in science. And basically, he also served a he goes to spiritual locations. They call him the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer. He's been on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. He's been on, basically Gaia TV. He's been on Oprah. He's been on many talk shows. He is like, he's been one of the top mediums in the world for the last 20 years, and everyone loves him. And he basically does readings for his clients. And basically, I feel when he joins us on our investigations, he's going to be able to teach, basically, Melissa, the aspects of his techniques of, mediumship. And then, of course, Melissa herself studying advanced mediumship and advanced development, shamanic healing, crystal healing, EFT, energy tappings, past life regressions, and doing readings. We really feel with our two mediums that we have currently on our team, this gives us a distinct advantage over a team that just has standard equipment because basically then you compare the medium's readings with the equipment, which is you're going to be able to tap into the energy a lot easier versus just teams that just might have just a medium and no equipment or teams that have equipment and no medium.
Right. Now, how many team members do you have? What is each one's role, and what type of equipment do you use?
Sure. So right now, of course, Mark Anthony, he's kind of like our Jeff Bellinger. He does like all of the research for us. He checks out locations and calls places for us. Certainly he's in Florida, so he's unavailable to help at this time, but basically he helps. He's like one of our first team members. And of course, we also have myself being, the founder and case manager of the team. And then we also have Rick, who is executive director of Extraterrestrial Research Center. He's also on the team. And of course, we got Melissa, so that's four. And then also we got a graphics designer, Raj, who basically is just kind of, he's not really physically on the team. He's in India, but he does all of our, graphics and promotional material. So like, every time we do a new investigation graphic or we need a t-shirt done, or we need some kind of drawing done, he does that. So currently at the minute, we got five people, basically only the three of us go on investigations. And we used to have Sasha, but currently Sasha's in Tennessee. She's a Civil War reenactor. She's a sound engineer. She is a musician, and she actually builds paranormal equipment. And when she helped us found the team, she actually built us an SLS camera, based on she actually did it all assembled it all by herself, and she also built a portable music box, much like Dakota Ladin uses on Destination Fear. And she also designed her own portal box, which hooks up to the SB7 ghost box and cleans up the ghost box using guitar pedals. So we actually at one time had about six people, and unfortunately, with Sasha now gone, we now have currently five.
Right on. Now, earlier you mentioned infestations or demonic hauntings. There's been many different perceptions over the years of if you know, even a demonic haunting is even possible, if they even exist. What is your perception? Do you think that these are demons, or maybe just lower vibrational former human spirits, or something that was never human, or something completely different than we don't even understand?
Well, our website, phantomdetectives.org, under basically article section, has a really nice layout of the four types of hauntings. And there's actually in one of the four, there's also one in our section we call demonic hauntings, which is basically negative entities that prey on the living that try to affect them emotionally, physically, and psychologically. And basically these type of entities that basically that are available, they basically try to attach themselves and try to hurt people. And, you know, they try to basically, you know, they might try to, you know, let themselves be known by making a mark or something on their hands or forehead. So I think that these are, you know, negative entities, fallen angels that basically were, that fell from heaven. And there are some of these locations, depending on if there's any kind of voodoo or ritualing or, you know, any kind of thing that going on at some of these locations, I believe that these spirits are very much, you know, at different places. You just don't know exactly when you go in investigation what kind of energy is there. So you got to be prepared. So we're very respectful. We don't go provoking spirits. We don't go, you know, trying to get them to, like, you know, you do it to him, now do it to me, you know, that kind of thing. We try to bring a very kind of respectful, and I think that why we get such good evidence and good results, because we say please and thank you. And that makes a world of difference when you're kind. And, you know, like what Rick said on many shows, like when you actually you know, treat people with kindness and respect. I mean, and if you think about them, like when they're alive, you're going to get better results than someone just demanding that they do something. So I think that's the best way to be. And people that are going through demonic cases, you know, Dave Giuliano, who runs the Ghost Hunter store, he actually has his own, like, you know, demonology classes where he can teach people how to basically deal with demons. And of course, Keith and Sandra Johnson from Ghost Hunters, a friend of mine, as well, they're also ordained ministers, and they actually can help people that are dealing with these inhabited negative entities. Of course, Father Jack Ashcraft, who was a friend of Malachi Martin's, and Malachi Martin was a Jesuit priest who did his many interviews with Art Bell. And of course, Bill Bean, who actually, you know, as a child had a lot of experiences, and he's an ordained minister as well. So it's nice to know if anybody needs any kind of, like, you know, contact information for these people that are trained and versed in demonology, I'll be more than happy to provide that to your listeners free of charge. If anybody needs, to find out more information on what Dave Giuliano's classes are and how he does them, I'll be more than glad to post those links for you guys. So that way they can get out there. And, you know, we usually refer the demonology cases to the people that have the experience and that have been through it. So it's nice to have that network that's ready to jump in and help us whenever we need them.
Yeah. Now, do you guys, while we're on this road, do you guys take a spiritual approach at all? Do you have a certain belief system that you kind of bring into investigations?
Oh, absolutely. We're all born again Christians. We are, you know, we believe that Jesus is the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. You know, we believe that basically, you know, he died on the cross for our sins. So we always always pray to Saint Michael, the Archangel. We also bless ourselves with holy water and also burn ourselves with sage. So we want to make sure that before we go into every location that we're 100% ready. We, we use smudge sticks basically to remove anything negative around us, because we feel being prepared going into an investigation and into a location is much better than someone that's not prepared and all of a sudden they get some kind of attachment or they feel like the energy is drained from them. So we feel that basically the more strategic that you can be going into an investigation, the better you're going to be in the long run. And also the better that you're going to basically remove anything that negative that's attached to you. So it's good to have basically the tools that you need at your disposal at any time, like using the standard things that have been used for many years.
Now, have there been any situations where the entities you're dealing with don't respond to what you're putting forth as your belief system or any of the Christian practices that you're bringing into it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's this location out there in basically, I'll talk a little bit about the Selma Mansion, and we were there last June for our fourth investigation. And we actually were up in, and this was interesting with this place, was Melissa was feeling, hey, there's a connection to Lincoln. There's a connection to Lincoln here. And I said, well, I do have research the history of the house, and I find out that the person that created the house actually was the great grandson, actually the great grandfather of Mary Todd Lincoln. And what's interesting about this location is that basically up the upstairs section, one of our guest investigators, her name was Ashley. Well, she her husband reported seeing a full body apparition on the top floor in the children's room, or on the doll room, basically. And basically, when he saw that figure, basically, I said, were you guys up there at the time? He said, no, we were on the first floor, doing the investigation. What did you see? And he reported, explaining, and from the description that he gave of what he saw, it matched General Andrew Porter, who was a Continental Army soldier who served under President George Washington during the American Revolution. So to be able to have that connection as well. So you'd just be very surprised, basically, that these spirits basically are very demanding. They can that so sometimes the demonic cases, like there was a down in the basement area, we tried to get a response from there. So there's a lot of dark shadows down there, and there's the dark figure. A lot of people reported seeing from previous teams that have been there that I've talked to that have investigated the Selma Mansion. They said the basement area, they feel very, very uncomfortable, and they feel there's a very much a negative entity down there. So when they went down there, they reported feeling several previous team members felt scratched, felt very felt like they were pushed. So it really sometimes these spirits basically is when you try to prepare yourself, being a Christian and praying the Psych Michael to Archangel and saying the Lord's Prayer, they don't respond very kindly, and they might end up being more aggressive if you try to use some of the techniques you've learned in your investigations to try to help remove these negative or try to banish them. Melissa is trained in banishing with holy water, but unfortunately during that time we didn't have the sage or the holy water. We started just using that in September, so we just basically had to do the best that we could given the situation. So these entities are very dangerous, and you just gotta they won't respond on command. They'll do whatever they want, and you just gotta be prepared for it, you know.
Wow. Well, maybe we could talk about some of the most maybe terrifying investigations you have, or maybe most dangerous situations you've been in while you're in an investigation.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to say, besides all the locations that we've done, we've also been to the Betsy Ross House, which is in Philadelphia. And the Betsy Ross House, as you know, the first flag was sewn there in 1776. George Washington visited there. And of course, Betsy's husband, John Ross, died there in the 1875. So you definitely know that this location and down the basement area, we booked the investigation through his Historic Philadelphia. And what happened was very interesting that night, because basically the door in the basement area, Rick and Sasha were using their Perlite, and Rick also was using dowsing rods, and the Perlite was going off like crazy. And Rick also has a scare bear that basically it's kind of like a REM pod. It just goes beep, beep, beep like that. And right when those things were going off, we got some terrifying growls on our website. And we have a whole bunch of EVPs from those investigations on phantomdetectives.org that people can download and just listen to as many times as they like. So you can hear a lot of really kind of demonic growls. It was completely terrifying. I have no reasonable explanation. Then when I was in the guest room doing EVPs and asking questions, I got this response of saying, I've been there too. And right in Betsy's room, I went in there, took a thermal picture. You can see a full body apparition of her standing, like literally right outside her bed. And the funny thing is that there was nobody inside that room because there's a huge barricade in front of the door of the actual room. So you have to basically go through there's like a window and all that. It's all covered with glass. So there's no way that's closed off to the public. There's no way that no one could have been in there. Why that, that image that we captured, why was it there? I have no reasonable explanation. And that was not only the only one that we did. And then when we did the White Chimneys investigation last December, that was Sasha's last investigation. We were down in the basement area. I was down in the basement area just taking some of the client's kids down just asking EVPs called during Phantom Time. And Phantom Time is our version of Dead Time, like Ryan Buell has, except we allow the Phantoms to communicate with us through our voice recorders. And I heard this really loud, like this metal shackle hit the like a quarter flying across the basement door. And I was like, hold on, someone throw a quarter? And like the kids were like, no, we don't have no change in our pockets. And then of course, Rick, he was running the ghost box. He has the S box from Ghost Stop, which is kind of similar to the PSP 7 and PSP 11. And we got a lot of evidence from that. And we got some growls basically during that investigation as well. So you definitely see there's a lot of inhuman spirits all over these places, basically. It just depends on when they show up, you know.
Now, having a Christian outlook, how do you see the extraterrestrial phenomenon? I know that many Christians that I've had on the show and other researchers believe that anything associated with it is just evil, and you shouldn't even be messing with it. What do you think about ETs? Do you think it's all evil, or do you think that there's a duality in it?
There's a duality in it, and because I actually know a guy named John Myler, he kind of bridges the gap between extraterrestrial in the Bible and also extraterrestrials, like, you know, believing, you know, so he thinks he bridges the gap, and he's written some books about this. And also the Reverend Michael J.S. Carter is an ordained minister, but also he believes in extraterrestrials as well, ETs. And those guys are good friends of mine, and they have basically said that their conclusion is a positive correlation between the Bible, and they believe that, like, look at the Egyptian, you know, all the stuff in Egypt and all the pyramids and all the hieroglyphics. And I think a lot of that, there's just no possible way a lot of that can be built by man. I mean, the amount of manpower that would have taken to build all those, like, you know, lifting those huge stones. And I definitely feel like, you know, especially a spiritual place like Egypt, you know, there has to be something extraterrestrial that built those, you know, just like, you know, I think that there's a lot of, you know, correlation between extraterrestrials, and there's actually scripture in the Bible that actually references, like, maybe not directly, but there's scripture in the Bible that references ETs. And, you know, maybe it was interpreted differently at that time period, because you got to factor in that it was written thousands of years ago. So what they interpret as ETs might be completely different than what we interpret it today.
Oh, I completely believe that much of the Bible is an account of human and interdimensional or off-planet entity interactions, for sure, because that's the only way you can really explain a lot of the stuff in there.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
And what's interesting, what's interesting is there's also a lot of markings and ruins all over the place that have a strong extraterrestrial connection. There's a lot of, like, crop circles and man-made stuff that is thousands of years old that has been seen and referenced and documented by different historians and, you know, Bible historians, and mentioned as possible extraterrestrial phenomena, like a different old, like, many all over the world. You can, like, especially in the Middle East, there's tons of those places, you know.
Now, earlier you mentioned one of your associates does work with the Extraterrestrial Research Center. Are you involved with this as well?
I'm not involved with ERC. That's kind of Rick's own UFO investigation organization. I'd be happy to, more than happy to come with you so you can discuss that with him. He actually has his own ERC organization. So that basically, he also has a director of research, a friend named Lou, basically, who helps him run that. He handles all the cases that come into the website, and he also handles, like, all of the research, the writing, the reports, you know, he works directly with the clients. So he's kind of like a one-man show, but he does a great job. He picks and chooses the best cases that come in. And he also had a case that was just very interesting, that was based out of Chicago, that had a lot of extraterrestrial origin. He'll be able to, you know, do that and talk to you about that on when you bring him on. So he kind of bridges that gap once, you know, again, because so he really does a great job of, you know, making sure that every client is, they're confidential and respective. And he also, you know, makes sure that he's well-trained in calling them witness. So he doesn't ever want their names to get out there, protect their privacy and, you know, protect their story. So it's very important while you're doing UFO research to really, what kind of, you know, what direction was the, you know, the craft going? Was it, you know, a cigar-shaped UFO? Was it a, you know, tic-tac UFO? What kind of colors? You know, any of the more detail that the witnesses provide to Rick, the more he's able to use quantitative analysis to solve, like, he can look at images, and he's also really good on like image editing. So he can basically clean up photos and, in resolutions, and try to bring out if there is something like that. Supposedly someone's seen like some kind of dead alien or something. It's actually like might just be a simple thing as a tree that's shaped like something particular. So he's really good, like image cropping and all that. So he can look inside these photos and really come up with a detailed analysis of what you're kind of doing that detective work of who, what, when, where, why, how.
Yeah, and there's been some really interesting theories coming out the past few years from researchers about the nature of hauntings and their connection to possible extraterrestrial activity, especially things like poltergeists, which could actually be cloaked beings somehow using advanced technology to disguise themselves and come in and out of our reality. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I know a friend. I haven't got a poltergeist case yet, but there's a friend named Keith Linder. He lives up in Washington. He has this house called the Bothell Hell House. And this guy you got to really talk to because his girlfriend Tina moved into this apartment. It was documented on Ghost Adventures. And literally, his girlfriend Tina and himself basically reported that the plants were levitating, literally flying all over his apartment by himself. And they couldn't even basically try to, they couldn't even deal with this. And I highly recommend getting Keith on the show. He'll be able to tell you the whole story. That's just the basic synopsis. And supposedly he brought a psychic medium over to this place as well. And she was also able to pick up on several evil, like, poltergeist spirits that were not even responding to their equipment. And supposedly Dave Schrader from, of course, Darkness Radio got involved. And, it just got to be a really hectic case. And I can tell you, poltergeist is usually called noisy ghosts because they like to let them, just kind of throw everything all over the place and just try to disturb the locations. And they also like to try to, basically just disrupt anything they can do to disrupt the household is what they do because they just like letting themselves be known. So if you check out this book called The Bothell Hell House by Keith Linder, it gives you a great detailed account. It's a good example of a poltergeist haunting.
Your staff psychic, what type of energies does she kind of pick up on? Does she actually communicate with spirit?
She is actually she's very gifted since she's been studying with Cindy. She is a clairaudient where she can basically hear spirits. She's a clairsentient. She can sense spirits. She's not quite a clairvoyant in terms of like her. I think she just needs more time to develop that, but she can see and hear spirits. So she's able to tap in using seeing visions and also she's skilled in psychometry, which is basically where you pick up, where you touch an object and you actually, when you pick up the object and you touch the object, you can actually pick up on the energy of it based on like exactly. And it basically brings up visions or tells a story. Much like Cindy, she has the gift of being able to sense the actual objects and knowing exactly how to like channel. And I think that she's also getting into channeling, as well, where she can basically allow them to, jump inside her and, be able to, and she can communicate with them. And I know Hans Holzer, who's like pretty much the father of American ghost hunting. His mediums, Ethel Myers and Sybil Leek. I know basically Sybil was very gifted at being able to pick up on spirit by channeling them. And she was one, and Julian, her son, kind of shares the same passion to him. He lives down in Florida. And as you know, Hans Holzer is pretty much the American the father of American ghost hunting. And his daughter, Alexandria, when they reinvestigated the Holzer Files cases with Cindy, Cindy also has basically, Olsen said, that you have to be prepared and you have to be ready by channeling and also by being able to sense, using your senses, like, touch, your, touch, smell, basically feel. So using your five senses and also using your sixth sense basically definitely takes time to develop, but you got to be 100% prepared. And Melissa is always prepared on these investigations. I mean, she does her readings also for clients. So she does tarot card readings and, crystal healing. So she just knows, she's just very well versed. I consider her a very advanced medium because to be able to pick up one of Cindy's proteges is outstanding,
Right on. Now, tell us a little bit about how you acquired Dark Matter News, and what are you guys planning on doing with this?
Sure. So Dark Matter News was a newscast at the bottom of Art Bell's Midnight in the Desert in 2015. Art had an affiliate director by a fellow from the Mutual News by the name of Leo Ashcraft. Leo was Art's affiliate director from April to October 2015. So Dark Matter News was the primary news service of Art's final return ever to the air. He actually hosted Midnight in the Desert, his show. And as you know, he's like the most, he's kind of the godfather of paranormal radio. His show Coast to Coast AM, him and Ramona created Coast to Coast AM for their love for radio, their love for each other, their love for blowing people away the night. And Art had 15 to 20 million listeners a night on Coast. He was very popular. And some of his legendary interviews with Malachi Martin, Whitley Strieber, Madman Markham, Dr. Carla Turner, I mean, John Lear. I mean, just the list goes on and on. And Art had hand chosen Leo to be his affiliate director. So when Dark Matter News, basically he kept it for 2.5 years. And then in May of 2021, he reached out to me and he basically said, "Hey, you know, I no longer want this news program. This was used for Art Bell's return." I said, "Do you want it?" I said, "Did you want to?" He just came out. He messaged me out of blue. Said, "Do you want to acquire this and buy it?" And I said, "Well, you know, I have my own organization. You know, I have my own ghost hunting team, my own business. But I'll be more than happy to discuss the price." So we sat down. We talked about the price, and then we came up. We reached an undisclosed agreement. We finalized a contract, and then on May 21st, 2021. I reached out and I bought the rights to the name, the logos. I trademarked the name, the website, the rights to the website, the rights to the old newscast that he did for 3 months on Art Bell's Midnight in the Desert. So basically then after I had acquired it, we then decided to rebrand it. So what we did was we kind of just did the website for right now, because basically I would like to be able to keep the news service on the original network that it came from. So basically what we did was on July 20th, 2021, we relaunched Dark Matter News under Phantom Detectives LLC ownership. So what we did is we rebranded it and we just kind of brought back the website as a tribute to Art, his memory and what he did. So what we did was we kind of put it out there and we started putting new news stories on it, like much like Mysterious Universe. We had the website kind of cloned and put our own version of it and we redid the logos. So in the future, we're going to be bringing back the newscast to the network it came from. But right now the network is kind of still in limbo at the moment because there's, litigation going on between one of Bell's former producers and the current owner who bought it. I'll have to show you guys the story, but right now the actual, in terms of bringing back the audio newscast to the network, that'll probably be coming in the future as soon as until the current owner tells me he's ready to do it. But for now, we'll enjoy Dark Matter News as a paranormal news hub where everyone can write about UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, conspiracy. I wanted to be kind of bring it to kind of a Swiss Army knife of the paranormal for everyone to have a community where they can post and enjoy, a slice of Art Bell's legacy and share it with people.
Right on, man. Well, let's close on this. How do you feel people's perception has changed since you first started working in the field of paranormal to now? Do you see people being more open-minded? Do you think people are a little more curious about this and that we're moving into an age of maybe a better understanding of some of this paranormal phenomena and possibly having our mainstream sciences get a little bit more involved in it?
I think so. And if you think back over the last 20 years, you can really see, I think more and more public are accepting that there is life after death, and especially with Dr. Raymond Moody, who wrote a lot of near-death experiences. I think there's more and more acceptance of it now, like things like places like Unsolved Mysteries, of course, Art, and more people have made it more relevant now. So people now are more coming out now and saying that this is legitimately very possible, and scientists are now saying that there is possible signs of life after death because of all the equipment and all the different apparatuses now used. I mean, you could see from 20 years ago, for example, you might just see an old-fashioned tri-field EMF needle nose EMF detector and maybe just a tape recorder. That's all we had about 20 years ago. And now, since the advent of Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters and Paranormal State and Portals to Hell and all these new apparatuses, all these people are coming out now inventing new pieces of equipment to be able to communicate with the afterlife, even proven stronger evidence by using the scientific method. You could definitely see that it's constantly evolving, and there's a bigger acceptance of, the paranormal phenomena, because more and more people are now coming out and saying that this is a legit possibility. There is something else beyond this life. And scientists are now saying, like, there's something called the electromagnetic soul, the law of energy, which it says basically energy cannot be created nor destroyed, but transferred from one form to another. So if the law of energy is out there and it can move from one form to another, then yes, I think it's starting to become accepted in the scientific community more and more.
Yeah, well, I would definitely rather trust the information from independent researchers and independent scholars than mainstream science any day. But it is encouraging to see some of the things happening out there. We have big, huge investigations going on places like Skinwalker Ranch that's being broadcast, although I don't trust any of the information coming out of there anyway. But it's interesting to see that it is being put into the consciousness of the mass public, and it's very fascinating to see what direction we could be headed in the future. And Joshua, thank you so much for coming on. This was great. Before you go, let the audience know about the best place they can find out more about you, Phantom Detectives, website, social media, all that good stuff.
Sure. So we have four websites. The first one is Rick's UFO organization. If for people that have any kind of UFO phenomena, or if they have any kind of basically questions on extraterrestrials or, any of that, his website is ERC. So letter E as in Edward, R as in Randall, C as in Chris, and the number 2, so ERC, the number 2, and then the word explore.com. So ERC2explore.com. And then basically Melissa's website is psychic, which is, P-H-Y, and then psychicmediumautumn.com. So psychicmediumautumn.com. And then, of course, we have Phantom Detectives, just like my name, one word, phantomdetectives.org and darkmatternews.com. And if you go to phantomdetectives.org under work photos, there's actually pictures of Melissa. There's pictures of Rick's UFO organization. So you just go to phantomdetectives.org right under work photos, and all four of our websites are right there.
Perfect. Well, Joshua, that was great. Thank you so much, and I'd love to talk to you again in the future.
You too. Have a good one.
All right, and until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will actually talk again possibly tomorrow night, definitely Sunday for Day Zero, and then Monday. See you then.